There are constant discussions about how to bring up the performance of students in public schools, especially in Oregon, where the graduation rate lags behind much of the country. Part of that discussion is the performance gap between white and minority students. It appears to help minority students improve their grades when more minority teachers are present. And if all goes as planned, one of our next guests will be a teacher a year from now. She's a member of a minority. Kelly Ramirez is from Grants Pass High School, now an education student entering her senior year at Southern Oregon University. Kelly, welcome to The Exchange.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here. And one of her instructors is here as well. Susan Faller Mitchell is a senior instructor in the School of Education at Southern Oregon University. Susan, good to have you.
Thank you.
So let's talk about the general realm first. In the training of educators, how important has it become to bring in minority teachers?
I think one of the things we look for is a diversity in general, because we do see diversity growing in our schools and a lot more in Southern Oregon, where many of our students come from. And so we recognize the importance of having a culturally responsive teaching in order to reach the needs of all of the students in the classrooms and to understand how they learn, what their family life is like, and how to put all that together so that they can be successful in learning in the classroom.
Culturally responsive, that's an interesting term.
Yeah. It's a powerful term. It's not new to education. We have been working on this in the state of Oregon this past year in terms of all of the university's teacher preparation programs in really in empowering ourselves as instructors and in how to teach incoming teachers the idea of being culturally responsive. In other words, recognizing the various cultures of the students in their classroom.
So knowing more than the subject matter, but quite a bit about the students themselves as
Absolutely. You know, a lot of times people have used the idea of an iceberg, the analogy of an iceberg. And if you can imagine the water level and the bit of the iceberg on top. So we as a society, as a group of educators, we can see the little bit that's on top, the difference in skin color, the difference in language, different holidays that are celebrated. But that's such a very, very tiny piece of the true full iceberg, which is below the surface. And that is, you know, learning about how do different cultural groups communicate. That's sort of important. How am I going to communicate with my students? How do I communicate properly with the parents of my students? How do I embrace the community to come in and be part of our school community? And there is so much below the surface, and that's what we in the state of Oregon have been working on this year.
So, Kelly Ramirez, for you as a student about to become an educator in a year or so, I mean, how daunting is this? You have to know more than just your subject matter and how to get it across to the students.
I think it's exciting for me, honestly, because, I mean, I have the cultural background. So, yeah, it is harder, but knowing that, like, I kind of am going through the same things or went through the same things that maybe Hispanic kids are going to be going through, that's great to know that I can help them on that cultural level.
So tell us a bit about you. You went to Grants Pass High School. You're the first in your family to go to college. Is that right?
No, the second.
Second, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
She has three sisters, and her parents have been amazing supporters, and all three of those kids are in college.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, so was it drummed into you young that you were going to go to college?
Well, my parents, they never went to college, so I really wanted to, like, to show that I could and, like, make them, you know, proud of me. So they never, like, said, oh, you have to go to college, but they put that in me. You know, it motivated me knowing that they couldn't, even though, because they didn't have the option, but if they did, they definitely would have gone. So that's why for me, I was like, I really want to show them that it's possible. I want to make them happy and proud of me.
Where did the desire to become an educator yourself come from?
To be honest, all of elementary school, I was like, I want to be a teacher.
Really?
Yeah. So there were, I don't remember like exactly when it was, but yeah. It's always been inside of me, apparently.
Are you fully bilingual?
Yes.
All right. So fluent in both languages, both English and Spanish. Give us an idea, Susan Faller Mitchell, about how quickly needs in the classroom come back as changes to curriculum in places that train teachers? So in other words, if you know, the people in the Grants Pass School District, for example, discover, well, there's some things that we could really stand to have addressed by our teachers on a daily or at least weekly basis, how soon does that sort of desire come back and gets reflected in the curriculum of what you're teaching your teachers?
I think curriculum, sometimes people think of that as being the textbook that's used in the classroom. And textbooks are, well, you know, they change out every 4, 5, or 6 years. The standards we're working with also drive what we teach. And those, as you know, we have the Common Core standards and the Next Generation Science standards. But really, it's the instructional strategies and how we teach that is going to make the difference here. And that really comes through, I think, in when districts make a decision about what are the needs of this unique district. I read an article recently about a school board meeting in Medford, and the Latino community was there, and it was the third year in a row that they had spoken before the school board asking for more bilingual staff and teachers to be available in the school so that they could support the parents and in their role as supporters, as the triangular connection. And the Medford School District is really working on that. They're looking for ways to bring in more bilingual staff. And some of our students are being hired to work as educational assistants. Other school districts are sending their teachers to specialized training where they get similar to what we have been doing at the university level for ourselves. And I guess the last thing I wanted to share is that the state of Oregon is now requiring that all teacher preparation programs put in place significant preparation for teachers coming out to have accreditation as being able to teach second language. And we were tasked to do that. We probably have about 2 more years to get that done, but we're already moving in that direction so that they understand how to do this.
We're talking about education generally and about getting more minority teachers into public education more specifically. Susan Faller Mitchell is a senior instructor in the School of Education at Southern Oregon University. Kelly Ramirez is an education student, a senior now at SOU. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Kelly, it seems like right off the bat you'd be highly in demand. Have you had conversations with potential employers already, people who are trying to perhaps groom you for life in their school system in a year from now?
Not yet, but I mean, I hope so. I'll be excited when they do start asking me.
We do. We get phone calls all the time, and I will tell you that with programs like Phoenix Talent, Spanish Immersion, Dual Immersion, and the Jewett Elementary now having the Spanish Immersion program coming up, they need to hire a new bilingual teacher every year. And, of course, Salem, Portland, you'd write your own ticket. So they call us all the time.
All right. So tell me, Kelly, about what exposure you've had to classroom training at all at this point. I mean, I don't know how comprehensive the program is. So through junior year, have you spent much or any time in classrooms with kids?
Yeah, we do practicums, which is pretty much we're volunteering our time in the different classroom settings. So we do – I went to an ESL classroom – did some hours there. I went to a fifth grade classroom as well. And there's just different classroom settings that I've gone to. And in most of those settings, there are Hispanic children. And I find myself connecting really well with those kids, especially.
How and what was the overall situation, though? I mean, were you a little nervous the first time you walk into a classroom? Or is it something that feels very natural to you?
I think you get nervous like for the first few days. And then after a while, you really warm up to the kids. And then after that, I mean, it is kind of hard at times, but if it's something that you really love, then it's not difficult. It's you push through because you like it so much.
How did it compare to any expectations you might have had?
I don't know. I guess there is a lot more that goes into being a teacher than you think behind the scenes. There's so much that you have to like assess the students for, things like that. So I guess going into it, I didn't really know there was so much that goes behind it, but it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of paperwork sorts of things. Yeah. Susan Fowler Mitchell, how do you find the right mix of somebody who can handle the administrative details that are inherent? Mm-hmm. I know enough teachers who live in my neighborhood; they have the summers off, those rats. but the load of expectations and you know, I's you have to dot and T's you have to cross, but then the feel that really comes from being a good teacher and able to communicate program material, subject material.
Well, we run them through a full year, and they start in, they're in the schools right now. They have all connected with their cooperating teacher, their mentor teachers. They're in there helping them set up their classrooms. They're going to in-service days with their teachers, and they're doing programmatic planning. So they're seeing how the group of third grade teachers all get together and plan for the whole year together. So they're seeing that. They're seeing how they go over their class lists, and they're looking at the students coming in. That's all out in the field. And then in our program, they are also full-time students with us, and we're running them through content courses, but also methods courses. And so they're learning how to teach science, how to teach math, how to teach language arts, and connecting all of that with the rigors of preparing for smarter balance and proper assessment and that thing.
Some people come into this, I would think, with a real feel for teaching that, you know, you kind of wind them up on day one and they seem to have a real aptitude for connecting to students and getting material into them. Not everybody's going to have that, though. So, yeah. I mean, how hard is it to get the people who might not naturally be good teachers to become good teachers?
That's an excellent question. We find that oftentimes as they go through those 150 hours of practica, they start to recognize, okay, is this where I want to be? And so a lot of times that helps. They end up saying, yes, I really want to do this. I absolutely love it. And then matching them with really solid cooperating teachers, really, really great role models. And then we go into the classrooms as guides, supervisors. We go in and we watch them teach. We give them feedback. We have them videotape themselves teaching. And we're constantly giving them modeling that we do to help them to see, here's how to engage the students. Here's how to build that magic and that love and that light in the classroom.
How many people stick with it? I mean, from the people who enter teacher training, how many people finish the course?
I'm really excited to say in the last couple of years, all of our, I'm in the elementary ed span, and they've all finished and been successful. We really don't want them to pull out. By the time they're in that senior year, by the time they're in their student teaching, we really want to know in our hearts they're good, successful. They will be successful, and in the vast majority of cases, they are.
We are talking about teacher training, specifically minority teachers in training, with Susan Fowler Mitchell, senior instructor from the School of Education at Southern Oregon University. One of her students is here. Kelly Ramirez is an education student at Southern Oregon University, just entering her senior year. Join us on The Exchange by phone at 800-838-3760, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Charlie in Phoenix. Welcome to The Exchange. Charlie, are you there? Charlie in Phoenix.
An English language learner and Native American coordinator for Southern Oregon. So, Jeffrey, I just want to say thank you so much for having this really important topic on air. And hi, Susan.
Hi,
and,
Charlie.
And Kelly, if you need a job, call me.
Thank you. I'll take you up on that sometime.
And I tuned in a little late, so I just want to, and you may have covered this, but I just want to make sure it does get covered. There is lots of research, probably 40 years worth, talking about the connection between having a similar demographic in your teacher population as student population and a really strong linkage to student achievement. And if you think about it, it really makes sense. If you have teachers that really understand the student population because they came from similar backgrounds, they're able to interact way more effectively with the students. And also, the students look around, and the message they get is that they can go to college and graduate school because they're seeing someone who's very much like them who has done exactly that.
Charlie, I really appreciate your call, and I know that we see a lot of research in that area of closing the achievement gap. I'm wondering, have you seen results in other areas of the country where they have been able to bring in more Latino student or teachers, and then the graduation rates and the success from that?
Yeah, there actually is research out there. As a matter of fact, Dr. Brian Shumate, who's from Kentucky, has accomplished some of that in
Medford
his
school
district.
Superintendent. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And there is research from throughout the country, New York, Florida, Texas, and we're seeing results even up in northern Oregon as well, in the Salem-Portland corridor.
All right, Charlie, you have a font of information. Thanks for calling in today. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
What are the usual obstacles, Susan, to getting minority students into teacher training in the first place?
I think probably two things come to mind. One is belief. You know, believing that that is an option for them, as Kelly mentioned, you know, she's first-generation college student, and we have probably about 12. That's what excited me when I was just looking at the numbers, the increase in the number of Hispanic pre-service teachers that we have right now in our programs. And many of them, they are first-generation. And so just believing in themselves because they don't necessarily have that role model at home, that community that has taken that pathway of going to college and becoming a professional. And then I think poverty is a big issue. You know, it's very expensive to imagine yourself going through college and paying for that and paying to live while you're going through college. And, you know, I think that probably holds people back.
Kelly, were there any particular obstacles to you? Were there things that made you have to think twice? I mean, yeah, you were clear that your parents said you are going to college, but were some of the options limited to you?
Yeah, we definitely had some financial struggles, especially towards, like, my high school years. So I for a while I was like, should I do teaching? I know it's not the most, like, highest pay, so I was like, maybe I'll be a pediatrician. I'll still be with kids. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, no, I love teaching so much. And so I just pushed through. And yeah, the financial struggles have really helped me, like, to know that this is, like, what I want to do. And, like, even if it's not the most highest paying job, it's going to be really beneficial because I really enjoy it so much.
What is it about it that you enjoy?
I enjoy just helping others and, like, knowing that there are kids out there who are like me and that I can help them connect. And, like, maybe there's kids out there. I was thinking of when I was in elementary school, and sometimes I'd be a little timid to raise my hand because I was learning both English and Spanish at the same time at home. So when I went to school, sometimes there'd be words I didn't know, so I didn't want to raise my hand and things like that. And then, like, I had a friend who was Hispanic as well, and towards my third grade year, they had her transfer schools for ESL. So then after that, I felt really lonely. And I did have other friends and things like that. But there wasn't, like, a friend that I had that I could connect with on that deeper level of, like, cultural, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, just knowing that, like, I can help those kids that are probably right now feeling the same way, that makes you feel really good. And yeah. And that there is more, like, to it. So maybe they may appear timid and stuff, but it's because most of the time they don't know how to connect deeper on that cultural level.
All right. We have an email here from Kathy in Grants Pass who says, the focus should be on good education. It should not be on focusing on cultural groups. We have many different cultural groups. She says, I worked in a school where there were minority teachers teaching minorities, Oakland and Richmond, California. Mm-hmm. That did not make a difference. Mm-hmm. Bilingual teaching is not the answer. Kids learn English better at an early age. This yes. muddies the water. It is, in a way, a distraction. By now, we should be focusing on excellent education, learning critical thinking, etc. We should not be focusing on race, ethnicity at this time, especially. All people are capable of learning according to individual capabilities. Okay, I'm not surprised to hear that, point of view.
And, you know, I just want to give an example of something that Kelly did yesterday or Tuesday in our class. We were doing a science activity, and I was pushing for the idea of inquiry and critical thinking. And so in this activity, we were dealing with, let's see if I can describe it. We had some of the group, they were representative of deer, mm-hmm. and the rest of the group were representative of the habitat. And everybody had to use hand signals, whether they were food, water, or shelter. And so they had their backs turned, and they would tell what is their representation. And then when I would say, oh, deer, they would turn, and the deer would have to run to their habitat. Now, I differentiated this because in explaining all of this in English, even though I used a few pictures to help, I asked Kelly to serve as a role model, as a role play of an English language learner. I want her to understand about carrying capacity, balance in the environment, and those are pretty sophisticated and deep, strong concepts in science. But to get her there with the gap in the language, I needed to find a cultural broker to partner with her, which I did. And then after a few rounds, I asked her if she was ready to go on her own, and she said yes. Now, Kelly, you then shared with our whole group of student teachers, how did you function out there in the midst of this game when I turned you loose alone?
Right. Well, yeah, at first with the culture broker, I was like just watching her. You know, that's what an ELL student would do. They just watch the person that's trying to guide them through it. And then after, I was like, okay, I can do it by myself. But I figured an ELL student, even myself, I remember, like, this is something that I would totally have done when I was in elementary school. I would have just kind of gone along with the movements, but not really understanding full well. So when she told us to follow, we did a signal. And then we had to, like, match our signal with the person that we wanted to go with. But there wasn't any more of what I wanted to be with, if that makes sense at all.
So you would have got through the motions without fully understanding what it was you were
doing.
Yeah,
but there wasn't that person there, so I just kind of cheated my way through. And just so that I wouldn't appear that I was wrong or something, just kind of going through it until I actually did understand and I finally adapted.
All right, so the numbers certainly show that getting minority teachers into classrooms where there are minority students helps the students achieve more. So we will see down the road how Kelly does when she becomes a teacher, which is certainly in the works. Kelly Ramirez is an education student at Southern Oregon University. Susan Faller Mitchell, a senior instructor in the School of Education. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.